And tonight, our main speaker is Lee Hsi from Orchid.
Thank you. My name is Lee. I'm an alcoholic. Still, thanks for the invitation and all the support and love I've received tonight from those of you that have come up and said hi. I think that the biggest one has to go to Lindsay, Larry and Lindsay. Lindsay's got to get up tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. to get to work by 4 a.m. or some such, and she's still close enough. And she's here. Regardless, Lindsay's here. Right? And Larry too, but Lindsay, I mean, come on. But you know, why I bring it up is there were so many. Larry and Lindsay are one of a few of you that came up, and Brenda, six or seven people came up and said this kind things to me tonight. Like, kind things. And it's not that unusual, but it's still, I have spoken at meetings before, here and there, locally, and people have come and said, oh, you're talking tonight? If I'd have known that, I wouldn't have come. Yeah. So to have the warmth and love that I got tonight from so many of you means the world. And it was not, and I get it, the joke. I understand it. But it still hurts, man. It's not cool. It ain't cool. Right? My wife and daughter for coming, and Anthony and Cody and Ryan and Alex is back there. My brother Sean Raymond Ty is sitting behind Glenn, who's here too, and Bob. I mean, my people are here, you know, and all the rest of y'all too. I mean, my tribe. This is my tribe, Alcoholics Anonymous. And my home group is the Thursday Night Men's Shag in Santa Maria, California. My sponsor is a man named Bob D out of Las Vegas. Bob's been my sponsor for about 20 years. That's how Sean and I know each other. Sean's sponsor used to be my brother's sponsee. He and I, Bob was our sponsor together. And that's what Sean and I it was funny. Sean said to whomever he's with, I've forgotten your uncle. And he said to his uncle, it's a speaker meeting. I'll probably know whoever the speaker is. And Sean and I go back 20 years, so it's kind of cool. So anyway, my sponsor, Bob D, and my sobriety date is December 10th, 1987. December 10th, 1987, I woke up, I went to the front room, I pulled down a fifth of whiskey that I had opened the night before, and I asked the woman I was married to at that time, I said, how much of this did you drink? And she said, none of it. And I was like, really? I did it again. I did it again. I had not intended to drink a fifth of whiskey all by myself again. I had taken my last final at Cal Poly, came home, and I'm going to get a little buzz on, man. Just get buzzed. Just celebrate. Quarter's over. Not drink a fifth. So I made a few phone calls, and I found out about this AA thing. I had been before years prior when I was in the Army in Panama, but only once. I went one time, it was some old guy smoking a lot of cigarettes and drinking a lot of coffee and talking about himself. And I'm like, I went to this meeting at the Lano Club, the Pioneer Group in San Luis Obispo, back when it was next to the train track. Don't know who was there, except one guy, Jack L., Jack Lanigan. Jack was there. The book study, have no idea what was read, but I do know Jack was there, and then after the meeting, Jack spent some time with me. And he tried to give me a big book. And I got a first edition with me up here. I'll talk about this in a little while. But he tried to give me a big book, and I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't take it at first. I was like, no, thanks. You know why I wouldn't take it? Not because I didn't want what you guys have. I did. I can't drink. I can go periods of time without drinking. No problem. But when I start, I'm like, Heather, I'm getting blackout drunk. Period. Blackout drunk. I'm drinking till I don't remember anything else, and I'm passed out. So I couldn't keep doing that. No, I wouldn't accept the book because I was going to Cal Poly. I was going to college at the time. I was paying 60, 70 bucks for books just like that one. And at school, you could sell it back at the end of the quarter. I didn't think AA would buy it back, right? But Jack told me the deal, and I did keep that book. Still have it to this day. And I think Lisa or Linda was the one newcomer we had. But I tell you what, if there's anybody out here that does not have a big book, I have it in my truck, just like Jack taught me 36 years ago. If you need a big book, I will give you one for free. Just like Jack gave me that one all those years ago. And he must have said something about sponsorship, because I asked him, would you be my sponsor? And he said, sure. So at the end of my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a big book and I had a sponsor. How many of you can say that? Every now and then a hand will go up. Unfortunately, I didn't read that book or call that sponsor for 5.5 years. Right now, how many people? Right? Now all those people that can relate. Yeah. 5.5 years, I was what I refer to as stark raving sober. Stark raving. I came here to not drink, and I'm not drinking just fine. Thank you very much. You know, if I got called on in a meeting, I might share something like, if you don't drink and you don't use, no matter how you do it, you're not wrong. And you know what happened? Is they wouldn't call on me again. That's what happened. And I was punted that meeting and quit going to it. If they're not going to call on me, I ain't going. And within a relatively short period of time, I wasn't going to a whole lot of meetings. And it's like, yeah, stark raving sober. The woman I was married to at that time read my journal, which is a violation. It sucks. It turned out okay, I guess, in my life and my situation, but it sucks. For boys, it's a journal. For girls, it's a diary. It's like, no, it ain't cool. It ain't cool. But there were some things in there that frightened her, and the next day I was checking the psych ward. So, and that's where my life changed. I got in that psych ward, a French hospital. I think it's a maternity ward now, but back then and I was reborn in there, so it worked. It was a psych ward, and I took a big book with me, and I took a 12 and 12, and they had paper, and they had pencils, and I did an inventory. It's a joke how bad it is. I still have it, because all I did was look at that page 65, the grudge list. I looked at the grudge list. That's what I did. Now, it's my first inventory, that page 65, because I didn't turn the page. I didn't go to page 67, where it says, setting aside the wrongs that are done, we resolutely looked at our own part, our own mistakes. I didn't do that. I just wrote what you did. But it's still an effective inventory for a couple reasons. One, in order to do a second inventory, you have to have done a first inventory. You can't just jump to your second. In order to do three, you have to have done two. To take continuous inventory, you got to be taking inventory. So it's a start, right? And the other reason it's effective is I still have it. It's not, I mean, I couldn't tell you where it is right this moment, but I have pulled it out several times with guys I'm working with that are like me, work at the speed of pain. You know, won't do anything until it hurts. And I'll pull it out. And I'll like, you want to wait? This is what you got to look forward to. Because it's written on San Luis Obispo, Frank Hospital, Psychiatric Ward letterhead, right? So you know, I'll start writing quick. I got out of that psych ward, and my life changed. Life changed. Sobriety changed. I started going to the Tuesday night stag meeting here in town. We go to the Strawberry Patch. I don't know anybody remembers that far back. You were a baby then. Come on. But, you know, Shauna was. Well, Pam, of course, Pam. Me and Pam and Larry, her husband. Larry, her husband was one of my heroes. Larry Rainey was one of my heroes. Larry Rainey, I am who I am because of Larry Rainey, because he had the courage that he could talk to me in a way that I didn't get pissed off or angry or hurt. I love that man. But anyway, Strawberry Patch, Men's Stag. And then somebody else nominated me to the secretary, the Grapevine rep for the district. I didn't know what the Grapevine was, to tell you the truth, but I got to stand up at every meeting and make an announcement. So, you know, sign me up, you know, service for the wrong reasons, but it was still service, right? And things changed. I became an entirely different person. I worked the steps a little bit more better in my ability, and I'm getting involved in service, and I'm doing this thing of... And Fast Eddie, Eddie M. was my sponsor. I got a Fast Eddie when I was in the psych ward. I never called him, right? But when I was in the psych ward, they were letting me leave. I know they don't normally do that, but they did. Remember when the psych ward was across the train tracks when the Pioneer Group used to be? And I used to leave and go to meetings. They'd let me leave, and I'd cross the train tracks, go to a meeting. And Fast Eddie was always there, and Fast Eddie became my sponsor. And I got out of the psych ward and became a homing person. But, you know... From whence did I come? Single mom. I was raised in San Diego. I was talking about, what was your name? You. Travis, really, because he's got a Charger shirt on. I used to be a diehard Charger fan. Diehard. You could tell if the Chargers won or lost the entire week by my demeanor. And then they moved to L.A., right? And L.A. is the enemy, man. My whole life in San Diego, L.A., you root against L.A. and you root for San Diego. So, but Travis is... Talk to me for a minute. Maybe I'll change. We'll see. But anyway, grew up in San Diego. Single mom. On welfare. Food stamps. I remember all that. You know, I am actually an example of the system working. The social care working. Food stamps and all that. And then I went to school, joined the military at 17 and a half. Got money to go to college from the military. Went to college. Got my degree, became an accountant, a CPA. I actually became an accountant, and because of sponsorship, became a CPA. I don't think I'll talk about that story, but I'm an example of the system working. I didn't have a dad. My role models were those guys up on the silver screen, John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. You know, those are my guys. The Outlaw Josie Wales is the best movie ever made, in my opinion. And some of the guys would go, yeah, girls are going, what? But I tell you what, you know how some people know Rocky Horror Picture Show? You ever been to Rocky Horror Picture Show and you can't even hear the screen because so many people know it word by word, line by line? I know The Outlaw Josie Wales like that. I've seen it that many times. And 1 hour and 28 minutes into the movie, well, it depends on what version. If you're watching it on TV, it could be edited and it might be 126. So don't correct me later. All right. But in the movie, you know, there's a part in the movie where Josie Wales rides into this ghost town and he walks into the bar, and there's a few people in there, and they talk, they banter back and forth, and they say, what'll it be? And Josie Wales says, whiskey. And they laugh and say, partner, we ain't had whiskey in this town for years. Might be a warm beer in the back. So Josie Wales walks out, and in that Hollywood fashion, you hear his spurs clinking as he gets closer and closer. He kicks open the batwing doors, and he's got a case of whiskey in one hand and two bottles of whiskey in the other hand, and he's the man, right? They love him. You know, he gets the girl, kills all the bad guys. His former enemy loves him or respects him in the end of the movie. You know, and I want to be just like Josie Wales, right? Unfortunately, in the real world, what you get is a suspended sentence for assault and battery, right? That's what you get. And, the girl doesn't want nothing to do with you, let alone run off in the sunset with you because you're just too drunk, or I was, you know? And John Wayne, if John Wayne were to walk into the bar and said, you know, pass that crack pipe, pilgrim, you'd have a different speaker because I'd have been smoking crack. But John Wayne didn't ask for crack pipe, man. John Wayne asked for whiskey. So when I matured at about the age of 14, I started drinking whiskey. I don't remember my first drink. I've prayed about it. I've asked God. I don't know, man. I don't know. What I do know is friends of my mom told me when I became an adult, friends of my mom told me that they gave me acid when I was 5 years old. I know. I was pissed off for that forever. You know when I got over it? When I put mom on paper. I put mom on paper a lot of times. A lot of times. But when I finally put only, my sponsor said, taxi cab Cliff. You guys hear, remember taxi? Now it's security guard Cliff. But he used to be taxi cab Cliff. He was my sponsor for a long time. And he had me say, he said, just do mom. Nobody else. I said, mom's on every inventory I've done. I don't care. Just do one on your mom. And that inventory, I got clean. I got free. Right? And my mom did the best she could with the tools she had. Amen. Thank you, mom. I love you. Period. Right? I got that from Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? But, that helped me with going through that. And I came out of I always go with the military. I went to the military, and I went into a thing called the Army. I went in the Army. I went into a thing called Special Forces, you know. And the reason I went into Special Forces is John Wayne was a Green Beret. John Wayne was a Green Beret. I was a Green Beret. Now, if John Wayne would have been a Navy SEAL, I'd have joined the Navy, man. But John Wayne was a Green Beret, so... Now I get it. I was talking to Goleta one time. True story. Talking to Goleta, and after the meeting, this gentleman, older gentleman, a generation above me, came up and he said to me, John Wayne was a Marine before he was a Green Beret. I was like, I didn't see that movie, man. I saw the Green Beret. All right? So. I eat now for the five is, whatever. You think you're unique, but you're not. There's somebody else who's done it. Selena's parents were smoking pot with her when she was five. You know, if we had met back then, we'd have been married a whole lot. We'd have never been married like Bob back there. Bob and his wife forever, right? But she's smoking pot, I'm getting loaded on acid. You know, and it's not that big a deal. I heard a story about a kid in Bakersfield, I think it was. Bakersfield, he came home and he told a kindergartner. Kindergartner, that's like five, six. He came home and he told his parents, his mom, he said, I learned a new word from the big kids. And she said, what? What word did you learn from the big kids? And he said, how do you spell it? He goes, I don't know, mom. And she said, well, what was the context? How did you learn it when the big kid taught it to you? He said, that's easy, mom. It went like this. Oh, there's some potheads out here. I am not a pothead. I didn't like pot. That doesn't mean if you went, I need to go, because I would, right? Because pot gets me out of here, but I didn't like it. I moved out on my own when I was 16 years old. I had enough money for booze and rent, you know. Smoke a doobie, you know, at 2 in the morning, get the munchies and go to the refrigerator, and what do you got? Ketchup packets from McDonald's, right? That's what you got. But you got the munchies and you got cotton now, so, yeah. you know, Top Ramen. I don't understand why Top Ramen was 10 cents a pack 50 years ago, 40 years ago, and it's still 10 cents. Why can't gasoline, why can't anything else be like Top Ramen, right? 10 cents a pack. You might have a little macaroni and cheese. What's the problem with macaroni and cheese? You don't got any milk. You don't got any butter. But you got the munchies and ketchup packets, so you mix it all together. Speed? No, thank you, man. I'm a neat freak as it is. My house is clean. I don't need speed to help me get my house clean, and I do not enjoy the sensation of my eyes beating me into the next room. I don't like it. I don't like it. No. Cocaine? No, thanks, man. No, huh? I don't like the high on cocaine. I don't like the coming down on cocaine. I don't like the expensive cocaine. You know how many fifths of Jack Daniels I can buy with what you're spending on that cocaine? That doesn't mean if you handed me a mirror with some lion's grill, I wouldn't snort it, because I would. But I didn't like it, you know, much. Acid. I loved acid, man. Acid was cheap, it was quick, it was easy. I might have even been reliving some childhood memories, didn't even know it. But the thing about acid is that you can't take acid and convince even yourself that you're maintaining, because you know. And when I joined the military, back in my day, they catch you using drugs, they kick you out, man. There was no rehab. So I quit using drugs, just like, I'm not an addict. My childhood could be described, you know, briefly, to get on into the Alcoholics Anonymous thing. I can tell you this. You remember how in high school they had most athletic, and most attractive, and all that? If they'd have had most likely to end up in a penitentiary, it would have been me. I was expelled from four schools. Kicked out. Don't bring your son back to this school anymore. And you know what? They'd have been right, though. I thought I'd gotten that award. Most likely to end up in a penitentiary, because I used to work at the United States Penitentiary in Lompoc, California. Convict in the back going, damn, I thought he looked familiar. And, you know, the thing about that is, you know, when I was 5-6 years old, 91, so 4 years sober, 3.5 when I got hired there, and they hired me as an accountant, that's what I am, and I went to the psychology department, and I talked to the psychologist, and I said, hey, I'm an alcoholic, member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd love to help you with your AA, and he's like, no, you can't let these comics know you're an alcoholic, they will use that against you. I'm like, oh, okay. So I stayed, hung back. 2 years later, he approached me, that same psychologist, and he said, hey, you want to help out with this AA? I said, sure. So I did things on my own time. I didn't do it on the clock. I'm an accountant for the penitentiary, but I used to bring people. Curtis Larkin, I don't know how many people remember Curtis. He was one of the heroes. Oh, yeah, Lompoc, all of Lompoc is on their head. Yeah, Curtis Larkin was a hero, one of my heroes, man, one of those guys who came before me and taught me. But Curtis, they could bring in Curtis, and, you know, and just, it doesn't even matter. Things changed. You did good. I lived in the Pomo at the time, and I used to listen to cassette tapes on my drive to Lompoc and back. It was perfect. One half would be the way there, and then the last two-thirds of the tape would be the way there, and then on the way back, one-third, and then I could listen to music for the last 15 minutes of the drive. But one time I was listening to this guy named Bob Earl, and Bob Earl was talking about going into the Lompoc Penitentiary 25 years ago when the AA sponsor was a Catholic priest practicing alcoholic. And I thought, wow, I wonder if he'd like to come in again. And through a series of events, it took a while, but I got hold of him, and I invited him in. He was going to come in October 1995, come in and share with the convicts, share with the inmates, have an AA meeting and a speaker meeting in the prison. And the Thursday before the Saturday he was coming, there was a riot in the chow hall. One convict, it was called the Trail Mix Riot. A convict was walking through the line, and they were giving out trail mix, one bag of trail mix, and some convict wanted two. And when the other convict only gave him one, it turned into a riot. So we were locked down. The penitentiary is locked down because of the trail mix riot. I called Bob, and I said, look, you're scheduled this Saturday to come in. Can't. We're locked down. When's the next Saturday you have available? He said, when it was, December of that year. I said, all right, cool. So we booked it. And then in the meantime, there was this meeting on the street. And in November of 95, the secretary said, hey, this is the last meeting of this group. The church is kicking us out, and I can't find a place. And some newcomer, who I don't know who he was, never saw him again that I remember, from the back of the room, he said, hey, how hard could it be to find a place? I'll find a place. So everybody says, yeah, find a place. In the meanwhile, when the village group was above Guitar Go, Lightning Heaven, or Lightning Go, Guitar Heaven, whatever, Haven, when it was above there, I was going to meetings there, and we had a Catholic priest who was coming to meetings, and I talked to him, and long story short, I called the secretary, and I said, hey, I got a place for the meeting, right? And he's like, Lee, as far as I'm concerned, that meeting is closed, it's over, you can have it if you want it. So I'm like, well, I don't know, whatever. So, I don't know, whatever. And then I looked at the calendar, and when I had rescheduled that guy, it was the same night as that speaker meeting, and the guy had a trail mix from October to December, and I said, hey, look, if you're coming up that day to go into prison, how about you talk that night at the speaker meeting? And he said, all right, sure. So a meeting that had 20 in November 1995 had 300 in December 1995. And Jimmy, I don't know how many around, but anybody remember Jack and Judy? Jack and Judy were a couple musicians. And I was digging in the cassettes, listening to speaker cassettes. And so I had Jack and Judy record this guy, Bob. I had him record Bob Earl. For me, I wasn't thinking about anything other than me. There you go, man. How's that? I was just having him record Bob for me. And Bob came up and he talked. And after the meeting, Fast Eddie M. came up to me and he goes, Lee, keep doing this. And I said, keep doing what? He said, these speakers, this is amazing. Good job, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, God. And then people came over and said, hey, how do I get a copy of that cassette? Ask your mom. Cassette would be old. Yeah. Yeah, you too, Jules, right? You know what a cassette is. So then we started recording and started blah, blah, blah. But see, the thing is that the meeting had been in this one city, and now we had moved it to this church. The Catholic church is in another city, so you couldn't keep calling it the old name because it had a city name in it. So we put our minds, heads together and said, well, how about South County Speaker Meeting? That's what it's called. And here we are. I was 29 years later, and I'm the one talking tonight, right? That's how this meeting got started. Now, steps in the audience. How'd that get started? Anybody? Solving Action Group. Anybody that's in the Solving Action Group, that's how they do it. I have been going to the Solving Action Group every year. The woman there, an older lady named Ann, had come up from L.A., and she was friends with this guy named Clancy. They were good friends. So once a year, she'd bring Clancy up to Solving. There'd be 10 people in this room, and Clancy would be talking. It was amazing. You got to spend one-on-one time with Clancy. So once a year, I'd go down to Solving and hear to her Action Group meeting, and that's what the idea for the steps in the audience came for. First few years, we lost them all the time. Then someone had the bright idea to laminate them. That was a good idea, whoever did that. The newcomer gift. It's not a big deal now. I guess it kind of changed a lot. But you know how that started? There's a guy named Mike who worked at PG&E. Mike was sober 4 or 5 years longer than me, so about 10, 15 years at the time. And Mike one month came in with a whole, 50 of the books called Sober Living, or pamphlets. They're not a pamphlet, they're booklets called Sober Living. And he said, give these to the newcomer, but don't tell anybody that I'm the one that supplied them. So that's what we did. You know, we started giving out that book, Sober Living, to newcomers. And then when those 50 or whatever it was he bought ran out, he bought more, and we kept doing it, and no one ever knew. Mike moved to Hawaii years and years ago. Birthday. Birthday's been changed. It's different now before the speaker. But so remember, these speakers, what they're doing, they're coming up in the daytime, they're going to prison with me, and then they're coming up here, and they're speaking at night at this meeting, right? The convicts are pooling their money. They got the, I don't remember what they, but they put their names on this list, and they submit it to the bank or to the treasurer and the staff member. And they would pool their money, and a check would go out to the speaker a week or two after the speaker came down. That would cover the hotel. So the inmates were covering the hotel. We go to 7:30 in here, and we covered the meal. We were going out to dinner then. We still are. But that's how that all got started. But the birthday, Debbie H. So I was putting them up at the Radisson in Santa Maria. And then we'd come up together and bring them up here to the meeting. It was over here at the St. Patrick's Church. That's where we started. And then one month when we were driving back, and Debbie was big, Bellflower, big group, and Pacific group. She was structured AA. And as we drove back to the hotel after the meeting that she spoke at, she said, the traditions were not meant to be read to remind people to come in from the break. And she says that's not how she said it, but that's how I heard it. So the next month, we started doing birthdays after the break. At 8 minutes, we rang the bell. 8 minutes, we rang the bell. I'd get people in here at 10. And then at 10 minutes, we'd start doing any birthdays over here. Any birthdays over here, any birthdays over there. And if you weren't in yet, come back next month. We'll recognize you then. And but that's how the birthdays got started. You know, that's how all the history, some of the history of this group, you know, and some of the stuff. And we used to have in my office, oh, I forgot to mention. So I was doing all this stuff on the penitentiary on my own time, right? I lived in the Pomo. I couldn't drive home. It was a 45-minute drive, 40-minute drive. So I'd stay after I worked 7:30 to 4. I'd stay at the office for an hour or two until the 6 o'clock count cleared at 6:30. And then I'd go in and facilitate a meeting with the guys or bring in a guest, right? We went from one meeting a week. There was a change in order, 5 meetings with an NA meeting on Monday night. And then one day the warden called me to his office and said, hey, you're a fine accountant. I got no problem with your work. You're doing great. But I've been watching you. You're more valuable to me working with these guys one-on-one. How would you like to be a drug treatment specialist? And I said, sir, I'm honored. Thank you. But I do this for fun and for free. I do this so I stay sober. And he knew about AA. I appreciate it, sir, but thanks, but no thanks. And he looked at me. He said, you don't understand. I'm the warden. Tomorrow, you report to psych services. You have a new job. Oh, my God. I was so scared. I was so scared. I didn't know. Wait a minute. Wait. And I wrote New York, talked to my sponsor. I was going to upstairs, Lightning Guitar Haven upstairs to the village group. And a woman helped me. She shared what she did. I don't remember who it was. I just remember the woman. And she said, Lee, you're not getting paid to do 12-step work. You're getting paid to help make 12-step work available. Straight out of 12 and 12. I wouldn't read the 12 and 12, but that's where it came from, right? Or, you know, and that's exactly what happened. I wasn't going to all the meetings. I was clearing people, bringing them in. On Mondays that were holidays, I'd go in on my own time and bring in the guests, right? I'd do that. The guys that are still out, I actually got one coming next year to the Orchid speaking meeting. He's been here, Dave B, you know, talk about the golden age of Lompoc. There was a golden age of Lompoc back then. I don't know, God, it's all God, right? And so that's how all this thing kind of happened. That's how this, and I didn't plan, and I don't say any of this, it's history. It's, you know, I didn't do the next indicated thing and you never know what's going to happen. One of the that's how I'm going with it. So on Tuesday nights we'd have a speaker tape meeting in my office. The guys would come down, 2, 3, 5, would come down into my office and we'd listen to a speaker tape. And they'd say, get that speaker. All right, yeah, let's pass on that one. Or get that speaker. So that's how the speakers for this meeting were getting picked. Tom Hicks had a meeting in my office on Tuesday night. One of them was a guy named Jack Crowes. Jack Crowes got sober August 16th, 1946. All right, and Jack was still alive. And I called Jack Crowes and I said, hey, Jack, I'm leaving, blah, blah, blah. How would you like to come up into the prison at Lompoc, California? And you know what he replied with? You know what he said? He said, you know, I started that panel back in 1946. He used to drive up from L.A. to Lompoc with Win Laws, Freedom from Bondage, that author of Freedom from... Those two used to drive up together and go into the Lompoc Penitentiary. I almost started crying to be part of that circle, part of that. So me and Jack got to be friends. He came up and talked. And I used to... Well, I don't even say that, but I was at a convention down in the valley in Burbank. And Jack was the secretary for the old timers panel that month, or that meeting, or that year, for that convention. And he had his book up, his first printing up, and the panel finished. And Jack got up behind, like Jules is doing tonight, behind it to close out the meeting. And then he set this thing aside. He says, I'm going to go off script for a minute. And then he said some things. I don't remember what he said, but then he said, and he held up this first edition, first printing of the big book about Paul Anonymous. And he said, this book has done me well the last 52 years. I want to give it to a guy. I think we'll use it well the next 52 years. I want to give this to Lee C. And the place erupted in applause. And I'm up in the front at the table with a couple of these older ladies who had been past chairs for that convention. And I couldn't believe it. They had me come up to the podium to take this from Jack. And I was crying so much. I couldn't even say my name is Lee. I'm an alcoholic. I was so overwhelmed with emotion. I wasn't thinking of John Wayne or Clint Eastwood. All I was thinking is, this doesn't happen to me. So if you want, this is a real one. This is the first edition, first printing of the big book. This is it. I know there's fakes out there now, but if you want to see what one, a real, you know, you'd be happy to let you. Jack said, he said, take it with you when you talk, but don't let it out of your sight. He gave me this in 1999, so that was 25 years ago, right? So God, all the things I just shared to me are God. That's the God of my understanding. I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't want to hear about God. You want God, fine. Keep your God. Talk to your God. Pray to your God. Do whatever you want, but leave me out of it. I don't want anything to do with God. And I used to share that the only reason I didn't get drunk my first 5.5 years is that I got lucky. Straight up. I got lucky. And after I shared that at a meeting one night, a young man, newcomer, came up to me and he told me, he said, you know what, Lee, you didn't get lucky. He said, you had a God in your life looking out for you and you didn't even believe in him. And it hit. It wasn't like a white light. And I didn't like fall to my knees and go, oh God. But I did go, huh, logic or something. And I found a God of my understanding and I'm okay, all right. And then some of the meetings were talking about getting on your knees and praying. And I'm like, oh, no way, man. That ain't, no. Real men do not get on their knees and pray. Not only not in Starbucks, but nowhere. Never. No. No. You know, Clint Eastwood was a preacher and Pale Rider. He didn't get on his knees. And then they were saying the same thing. You guys heard it, you know. And what someone said is, put your shoes underneath your bed at night. Put your shoes underneath your bed. And while you're there, say a quick prayer. I'm like, well, whatever. All right, I'll try it. So I shut the door and pulled the shade. And I put my shoes underneath my bed. And while I was down there on my knees, putting my shoes under my bed, that's why I was on my knees. Right. I said a quick prayer. And when I got up, I was different. Again, it wasn't a flash of lightning. I remember something in here, something in my soul. And I can't explain it. If it's happened to you, you get it. If it hasn't happened to you yet, I hope you stick around long enough that it happens to you. And I found something. Something happened. And I can't say I've been on my knees every night, every morning, and every night since then, but I can say for the last 25 years or so, maybe 20, maybe 23, I've been on my knees before I get in bed at night. I get on my underneath covers. I get on my knees and pray. I grab Peter's hand. We pray together. When I roll out of bed, she's still sleeping, but I'll reach over and touch her. And we pray, or I pray. Every straight, you know, it made a difference in my life, you know. My daughter, one of my daughters, Emily, one of her majors in college is religion. She was very interested in religion. And in the early 2000s, she had invited me up to upstate New York to a Buddhist monastery for the Thich Nhat Hanh group of Buddhists. And I went on this Buddhist retreat, and my life changed. I slowed down. I don't have time, won't go into all the details, but it changed. And the Buddhists didn't, in this monastery, on this retreat, they didn't care. See, if you'd have asked me, I'm 20, 18 years sober at the time, whatever, and if you'd have asked me, are you praying? I'd say, yeah. And if you said, are you meditating? I would have said, well, what do you think about it? How about them Dodgers? What are them Chargers? Right? I wasn't meditating. I didn't know how to meditate. And I don't know. But the Buddhists don't care. They put you in a room with a bunch of other people that are there for the retreat and say, we're going to meditate for the next hour. Sit here. So I did. And I learned to meditate the way they did it that way. And a lot of things happened in that minute, but it changed. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then the other thing about that trip is in New York is that in New York they have these things called boroughs, neighborhoods of ethnicity, Cubans, Puerto Ricans. And this one group was the Hasidic Jews. And the Hasidic Jews are extremely proud of who they are. They're proud of being Jewish. They're proud of their heritage. They're proud of everything about themselves. And I'm Jewish, right? My mom left my parents, her parents, my grandparents in Florida, came out to California, and left all that behind. We never talked about it. I don't know anything about it. I just know I'm Jewish. That's what I know. I don't know anything about the faith. But I saw them, and I thought, man, I want to know more about my Jewish heritage. I think. And as I'm leaving New York, I'm in the airport, and this young Hasidic Jew walks up to me, and he says, are you Jewish? If you'd asked me the prior 40 years of my life, I would have said no. But because of what happened at the Buddhist monastery, and after when watching, seeing them, and praying to God, saying, I want to know more about my Jewish heritage, I said, well, yeah, that's who I am. And he said, we need you. And in the Jewish faith, they have a thing called a minyan, and the minyan is 10 or more men praying together. And they had 9. I was there, 10, right? I could only, last couple of years, tell this story without crying. When I used to tell this story, I'd start crying right now. That is the God of my understanding, man. I tell God I want to know more in my Jewish heritage, and 2 days later, he's got me praying in Hebrew. Well, they were in Hebrew. I'm just crying like a baby. And with 9 other Jewish men, I'm praying, right? It's amazing, this God of my understanding, who he is. So, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, keep your God, you do what you want with your God, leave me alone. My neck hair is bristled, just like it talks about in the big book. And now I consider myself a Christian Buddhist Jew. And that works in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, man, that is fine in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm telling you, it's okay in Alcoholics Anonymous. No one cares. Well, some do. I have had a well-meaning Christian come up to me after the meeting and say, you can't do that. You can't do that. Scared me. I went to my preacher. I better walk up where the Walker Speaker meeting is, or the Presbyterian Church. I went and said, hey, look, I want you to know who I am. This is me. I'm getting involved in this church. I'm doing a lot of things with you and for the church. This is who I am. Am I cool? Am I cool to be a Christian Buddhist Jew in this church? And he started laughing, kindly. And he said, first of all, Jesus was a Jew. So you're good. Jesus was Jewish. Right? And second of all, Christians are supposed to be meditating. We lost it years ago, hundreds of years ago, somewhere the Christians lost meditation. So if you go to the Buddhists and learn to meditate, you're in, brother. And yeah, we want you at this church. You know. And like I started this talk with tonight, with how many of you made me feel so welcome tonight. That's what I get from my church. It turns me out sometimes, the kind of things that they say to me. And all I do is what you taught me. All I do is what I learned in here. That's what I do. Right? I say often, the people that are with me, my bros, my homeboys, heard it hundreds of times, but I always say, I am not a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I go to that church. But I'm a better member of that church because I'm here with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not a better member of my Rotary Club. I love Rotary. I love it. Service of ourselves. Service, service, service. That's the motto of Rotary. Learn that here in Alcohol. I'm not a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I attend Rotary. But I guarantee you, there are some guys in that Rotary Club I would have beat up, punched out if it wouldn't have been for Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the work. Right? This meeting, family disease, family recovery, and I'll finish up in, I don't know, like 10 minutes, something like that. I know some of you guys have a block to drive home. I'll finish on time. But the key thing about this meeting and why it's so, you know, Kendall's with us tonight. Kendall just celebrated 8 months. Kendall is only my wife's daughter, but our daughter, right? She just celebrated 8 months. She's here with us. But this meeting, yeah, actually, go Kendall. I've got Cody with 55, and Ryan is right in that range, 50-something, and Alex back there with 9, 6, 8. Anyway, a lot of guys left. But the thing about my daughter, Jessica. Anybody listen to Sunny Country on the radio? Sunny Country? I mean, if you live in Sunny Country, Jesse and Jay, Jesse's my daughter. And Jesse, in the morning, is up there on the radio 6 to 10 a.m. on Sunny Country. And I believe she got to be so good behind the radio because of coming to meetings, about coming to this meeting and hearing good speakers, and coming with me to conventions and hearing good speakers. I believe that's how she got to be a good speaker. But she used to have she's had more meetings, more commitments at this meeting than many alcoholics have. Maybe not anymore, but back in the day when she was 10 through 13 years old, she used to ring the bell to let us know it's time to come in. She used to sell the cassette tapes, that's how long the cassette. And she used to count the seventh tradition. Once we would do the seventh tradition, we'd give it to her in the back and she'd count it. And 1 month, true story, she's 10, 13 years old, and 1 month Jessica got invited to go to a slumber party with a bunch of other young ladies on the first Saturday of the month, the night of the speaker meeting. And she went to her mom and said, Mom, what should I do? And her mom said, go be with, you know, go, it's a slumber party, it's okay. And she came up to me, and I'll never forget, looked at her blue eyes, my daughter Jessica's got blonde hair, blue eyes, and she looked up at me and Dad, and I'm like, Jessica, go be with your girlfriend, it's okay, honey. And she looked up at me and said, but Dad, I have a commitment. I asked her to sponsor me, man, I swear to God. I had guys who don't show up at that meeting for a girl. They don't show up, or whatever, you know, whatever. They got commitments, and they still don't. My daughter, my 10-year-old, maybe 13 at that time, showed up Counted the 7th Street and sold the cassette tapes, and we dropped her off at the summer party. She didn't miss a beat, because they stayed up all night anyway, right? One time she was in San Diego, coming back on a train from San Diego to here, to Guadalupe, I imagine. How trains, if you don't know, trains have seats that face each other. And so she was on one side, this young lady was on the other side, who had a big blue book, or a blue book in her hand. And Jessica said, my daughter Jessica, who's not an alcoholic, said, rarely have we seen a person fail. We're thoroughly following our path. And the young lady sitting across from her goes, oh my God, you're an alcoholic? Or no, you're a friend of Bill? And she goes, no, but my dad is. And then for the next 4 or 5 hours on the train, they talked AA. My daughter helped. And she was less than 30 days sober, going on a trip up to Oregon to meet family or something along those lines. And Jessica was there for alcoholics anonymous, is a family disease, and it's family recovery, we were talking about the Chargers. Back in 94, the Chargers were in the Super Bowl. Actually, 95, the Chargers were in the Super Bowl. Back then, there were not a bunch of Chargers. People wouldn't be like Sabbath wearing a Chargers shirt. One time I spoke down in San Diego, I said, it's really cool to speak in San Diego where people wearing San Diego Padres and San Diego Charger hats other than the homeless. But it was true. Back in the day, when they were 1-16, nobody was wearing Charger stuff, right? I was with them then, but 1-15. But anyway, they were in the Super Bowl, and, we went down to San Diego, so I took Julianne, my oldest, and Emily, my second, and we drove to San Diego to watch the game with a bunch of other Charger fans. And we didn't take travel bingo, A to Z, or any of that. What they did is they grabbed Advil Seize It, and they grabbed a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the two of them did, and they sat in the back seat while we drove and read passages from the big book and said, okay, Dad, what page? They tested me on the book, right? I didn't read this book. 5.5 years, start being sober. I didn't do this thing. I didn't put away chairs. I didn't pour coffee. I didn't do any of this stuff. I didn't come here for that. I came here to not drink. And then I started, after the psych ward, I started paying attention. And again, it was a woman, a visiting woman. And it was, again, upstairs above in the village group. When it was upstairs, a woman came to the meeting and talked about reading 2 pages a day, absolutely no matter what, out of the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 pages a day, absolutely no matter what. And like probably half of you thought, that's stupid. That's stupid. They are in chapters. They're in chapters for a reason. You're supposed to read the whole chapter. The problem with the chapter is it takes a long time to read a chapter. So you know what? I'll read it tomorrow. But two pages? That's 60 to 90 seconds. 60 to 90 seconds. Depends if there's any hard words. I've been reading 2 pages a day for probably 25 years. 2 pages, absolutely no matter what. I've been reading 2 pages. There's been one time I remember not reading it when the Chargers lost to Denver on Sunday Night Football. I used to have season tickets, and I drove to San Diego to watch the game. They lost to Denver, and I remember driving back, and I didn't think of it, but I remember the next morning, oh my God, I didn't read my 2 pages. And that's why. Anyway, I know the book, man. I know the book. Am I trying to impress you? Absolutely not. There are people drunk who know the book better than I do. There are people drunk who know the book better than I do. But it's a tool that's been laid at my feet that I pick up. And 2 pages a day, 60 and I can do that. Two things, two last things. One, Alcoholics Anonymous, think of Alcoholics Anonymous like a big swimming pool, big Olympic-sized swimming pool. And in this swimming pool, there are people that swim really good, man. They barely put their head like Katie Ledecky. We just had the Olympics, like those Olympic swimmers. They swim good. They swim like that. They're good swimmers. And if you're anything like me, I want to swim like that now. I don't want to practice. I don't want to get in the water and learn. I want to be the main speaker at the second speaker meeting I ever went to, right? But they don't go, hey, you angry, pissed off guy, never worked a shift, criticizes everything. You want to talk? They don't do that. That's not how you get behind a podium. I'm telling you, right? And there are people treading water and doing a side stroke in the pool of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell you what, the rest of us will give you everything we have to teach you to swim. Free! Free! We'll give it to you. Because when I teach you to swim, it helps me swim that much better. I tell the guys I sponsor, it's 50-50. This is not 51-49, not 90-10. It's 50-50. Everything that we do helps me stay sober. So we teach these guys to swim, or teach, we teach each other to swim. But the key thing is that you got to stay in the pool, man. You're not going to get online and look at virtual swimming and go, oh, okay, I'm going to jump in a swimming pool and swim. No, it ain't going to work. Read about it. Go to the library. Check out a book on how to swim. And then go jump in a pool. See how that works for you. Right? But come out here with us And we'll teach you to swim. And the last thing, I tell you what, man. Judge me. Go for it. Come to my home group. Judge me. And I guarantee you what you will see will be a selfish, egocentric, terribly egocentric, alcoholic, throwing myself as best as I can into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because this is the only thing I found that saved me from me. I love you guys. God bless you. Stay in the pool. Thanks.
Want to give me another round of applause?